Big show for you here today with the Week 6 preview show. Andy Behrens joins me in the first half to talk through some critical matchups. Washington at Baltimore is must-see TV with the highest over-under of the week. Detroit and Dallas, not too far behind. What are we doing with guys like Sam Laporta and Rico Dowdle? Also, Spencer Rattler, is he going to keep the Saints on the track? In the second half of the show, Tara Roberts joins me to go through the make or break players for the week and some very volatile guys you might have to consider starting even if there is no floor. All that more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, October 11th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that, as he always does on Friday, is the man himself, decked out in his Iowa garb. Andy Behrens, what's going on, buddy?
I'm thrilled to be here. Fun weekend coming up for a variety of reasons. I'm a little dismayed that Yahoo made the decision not to send me to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium for Bears and Jaguars on Sunday morning. But, you know, because there's no place on earth that I would rather be. But hey, I'm still excited for it. I'm still excited for week six. Good times.
Man, I mean, you got to feel pretty good that you've got a London game to wake up early to watch, Andy. And, you know, I mean, knock on wood, fingers crossed, I'm not jinxing you here, but your team is not the biggest show coming into the matchup. Like, one team
about
is
it.
I know the Jags are coming off their first win of the season, but and we'll talk about one Jaguars player later on who's maybe making a name for himself. But hey, they're definitely more of a disaster, like careening towards a full-on reset, and the Bears, you know, potentially are not.
Yeah, well, the problem is a loss to the Jaguars, and all of a sudden they are the biggest show involved in the London game that day. So, but still, I'm cautiously optimistic. We've got a couple of decent games out of Caleb lately. Last week, in a low degree of difficulty matchup, was super promising.
Hey, listen, what we can ask of these guys is if there's a layup lane, hit the layup. All right, take it and hit the layup. Caleb and the offense did a lot of encouraging stuff coming out of that game, that's for sure. And yes, again, we will talk about one Jaguars one Jaguars player later on. All right, if you're new here, I mean, you're joining a fantasy football podcast heading into week six. Shout out to you.
Okay.
Really, I mean, appreciate the hell out of you for being here. You are truly a trooper. And maybe honestly, with all of the injuries and stuff, you're like, I got to do something different. God, I'm going to suck it up and listen to what Harmon has to say. So thanks for joining the pod.
I hate to think about the person who's like just listening for the first time and they're like, I'm going to give Behrens one shot. And like, here I am, absolute slob in my Iowa sweatshirt. And I'm just babbling about Caleb Williams and some London nonsense. Sorry.
Well, hey, new listener, to if you're somehow just finding out about Andy Behrens, this is pretty much it. This is you got about 90% of the experience here.
This is a representative sample. You're totally right. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And the other 5%, like one more 5%, is him kind of like scolding you lightly a little bit about some of the things that are going on in your league, and then the other 5% is like really dead on insight. Okay, so we're gonna get some of that 5% out of Andy Behrens, because as he always does, he joins the first part of the show here on the weekly preview, and he provides three burning questions that he wants answered, and then three matchups that deserve your attention. He did not have the Bears Jags game listed there. I just brought that up of my own volition. Later, in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts joins me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. And then we'll end the show with our keys to winning each week. So, Andy, let's get into those three burning fantasy questions that you want answered. Hit me with number one on your list.
Yeah, I'm gonna reach back to a topic that we discussed on the recap show last time around, and that is, does Josh Allen get right this week despite the pretty daunting matchup against the Jets defense? The Jets in obviously a little bit of disarray right now, but still on paper that's been a very difficult matchup to this point in the season. Allen coming off a game in which he completed just 30% of his throws, which is just wild. And as you pointed out in the recap pod, and we have discussed previously, like when Mac Hollins is leading the team in targets, we might be outgunned a little bit. That is a problem. This is a team that has a suspiciously Devontae Adams shaped hole in the offense that, you know, you would love to see him dropped in there for at least Josh Allen's purposes. It's rough right now. I think if Khalil Shakir can get back, that would be a huge deal. It would be certainly a huge deal in terms of Allen's completion percentage, because man, Shakir has caught almost 90% of his targets over the past two seasons, not just this year. I think he only has one target that he didn't snag this year, which is like, you know, that's like what a running back does. But over the last 2 years, it's like 90%. He's been crazy effective. Obviously, a short range guy. He doesn't solve the Devontae Adams problem, right? He's not like your boundary receiver. He's not your big play outside go get it guy. And they, you know, maybe Keon Coleman becomes that. He's not that quite yet. And now we get the Jets, and they rank second overall against the pass. They give up less than 6 yards per attempt on the year, only two passing touchdowns allowed on the year. So it's not a spot where I look at it and I'm like, oh man, fire up Josh Allen. But I would certainly like to see things look a little different, look a little better.
Here's the bad news. We don't. I would certainly like to see it too, as a Josh Allen manager in many, many spots. I'd love to see that. Here's the problem. We don't have, obviously, full practice reports throughout the week. We're recording this, obviously, on a Thursday morning, as we always do. But at least on Wednesday, Khalil Shakir didn't practice with his ankle injury.
Yeah.
Curtis Samuel didn't practice with a foot/toe, because that is a thing that has continued to dog him. He got more snaps in week five against the Texans. He just doesn't look right, because I don't think he is right. And now James Cook is dealing with a potential turf toe injury, too. So, like, shoot, those are probably their three most reliable non-tight end pass catchers, right? Like, yeah, those three guys. And then obviously Cook, taking him out of the run game, that might put more focus on Ray Davis, who I think is one of these backup running backs. I don't know his roster percentage. I can look it up I don't know it off the top of my head. But he's one of these guys that should be pretty close to like 100% rostered. You're not going to be rushing out to play him. He's 8% rostered in Yahoo leagues, by the way. So that needs to come way, way up. It probably will come up if there is a lot of reports about James Cook potentially missing this game. But you're not going to rush to play him in a Monday Night Football game against the Jets run defense. Even with Robert Saleh no longer in the mix, we still expect that to be a good unit. But he's still a guy that, like I said, should be probably 100% rostered and definitely will be a big priority waiver wire pickup heading into week 7 if James Cook misses this game. Again, that's tough, though, because that's their three, like, and obviously Samuel has not been what they wanted because of this injury. But theoretically, those are their three layup target receivers. You know, it's tough right now for the Bills offense. And I think they're just at a huge disadvantage going against that Jets secondary with Keon Coleman still playing outside receiver. I saw Steve Smith on his podcast talking about Keon Coleman needs to move into the slot, and I did the like Spider-Man meme back to it. That was great.
Yeah, man, who was there first? I mean, you were there first for sure, 100%.
Hey, Steve Smith knows ball. Steve Smith, Steve Smith might be a reception perception fan. I'm just gonna leave it at that. But anyways. So he's talking about like that. That's definitely an issue. The Matt Collins thing, Dalton Kincaid. Can we just say, like, Dalton Kincaid is fine? Like, he's a second-year tight end. He might get better, but right now, he's fine. So they're just coming in there with a bunch of non-difference makers against a very good secondary.
Yeah, and Dalton Kincaid, I believe, matched Mac Hollins with 6 targets last week. They didn't go anywhere, right? It's been a struggle. And part of the argument for Dalton Kincaid all along was, you know, he's going to get a bunch of these layups. Can he be one of these primary slot guys who's not really asked to do tight end things so much as he's just asked to be an easy button receiver? And like, but the whole offense has to be, the whole passing game has to be functional for that to really shake out. And it just hasn't been. And I'm, you know, again, I find Keon Coleman an absolute delight, and I hope that he is a successful NFL player long-term. And when the ball gets into his hands successfully, good things can happen. We've seen that. We saw it last week, right? Like he had a mostly bad game, except for the one ball he caught. He took to the house, and it was a highlight touchdown. It was great. So he's still a fun player, but we, you know, the rest of the Bills are at a stage where we don't need fun developmental players, right? We need answers. And he's not a firm answer yet.
Yeah, this is my problem with the Keon Coleman thing. You said that so perfectly, Andy, even as a prospect. And, you know, I did like a whole YouTube breakdown on this. It's like getting once the ball is in his hands or I mean, just in his vicinity, really fun things can happen. It's getting the ball into his hands is it's tough that when he's an outside wide receiver. So like Steve Smith was making the point here, they're not setting him up for success. Like, let's get him some snaps in the slot, off the ball, anything like that. It's just that boundary X receiver stuff is going to always be volatile. So he's definitely not somebody that should be in fantasy lineups right now. Honestly, probably closer to a guy that, I mean, he scored the touchdown last week, but he might be a guy that ends up getting dropped and then is an impact guy in the second half of the season. You always got to think about that with rookies. It's just really unfortunate, the Shakir thing, because right when I think we're starting to get to a point where it's, you know, they need to get this guy, like, we should come into every single, like the Chiefs do with Rashee Rice, we should come into every single game thinking, we're getting this guy, we're throwing him the football 8 to 10 times a game, period, bare minimum, no questions asked. He gets hurt, he has an ankle injury, and who knows what's going on there. So before we just move away from this topic, just from a practical standpoint, because I know people are listening to this and like they have Josh Allen on their fantasy teams, like, okay, especially this new Barons fan that we just caught here in the net. You're like, all right, what do we do? Andy, you just told me like to be Andy and Matt, you just told me all these things to be concerned about Josh Allen here in week 6. Do I like not play this guy against the Jets? If you look at our Yahoo rankings, the only one who might have like the gall to say that is Dalton Del Don, who has him ranked as the 11th quarterback. Yeah, shock. The guy with the guy with the stones on the Yahoo fantasy team is Dalton Del Don with his rankings. 11th quarterback this week. You know, Dax higher, Brock Purdy's hot, shock. Brock Purdy's higher, Jordan Love's higher, like all these guys. You know, even Kirk Cousins, too. Like, that's probably the one guy that you could actually pick up off the waiver wire theoretically and like, oh yeah, well I'll start him over Josh Allen. I don't have the fortitude to do that. Do you?
No, but like the rest of us also have Josh Allen at like 6 or 7, which, you know, that is a way of communicating pessimism, but you probably still got to play him, right? It is, and of course we know that Josh Allen can have a day. He's sort of in that small club of quarterbacks who can have a day that does not look good from a passing perspective, and he gives you 2 rushing touchdowns and finishes with 27 fantasy points, right? Like that's just totally in play. And you have to factor it into every game, even though it's the Jets, even though this might be a low scoring affair, it's still Josh Allen. He's still the primary goal line runner when they need him to be. And he's still a, you know, proactive and really fun runner. Even if they struggle, even if he finishes with like 165 passing yards, this guy can finish as the QB5, the QB3, QB1, you know, it's in his range of outcomes, even in a difficult matchup. We've seen that many times over the years. So I'm never going to squeeze a healthy Josh Allen outside of my top 8 or so, but this is about as low as I ever get him. So, and you know, you're not like, I'm looking at the guys that we have ranked ahead of him in the consensus. Nobody came away from their draft in all likelihood with Joe Burrow and Josh Allen. Nobody came away with Kyler Murray and Josh Allen. I don't think you came away with Jordan Love and Josh Allen, unless it's a super flex league, right? So I'm certainly not saying, you know, let's think of who the guys were on the waiver wire this week. I'm not saying go out and get Daniel Jones and start him over Josh Allen. I'm not telling you to, oh, hey, Justin Herbert still injured, is back from bye, go get him and start him over Josh Allen. Not saying any of those things. Would I think about it with, you know, again, maybe Brock Purdy is a guy that you could have as a backup on a roster with Josh Allen. I'd have to give that some thought, but by the time you've thought about it, this pod is already out there and Brock Purdy has played. So I can't even help you there. He's playing on Thursday night, right? So I love that you got there
like in the middle of that. Right. Yeah. What about a guy like Fields? I mean, that would be maybe a guy, but I'll tell you what, I don't have the fortitude to do it.
I think what they want from Justin Fields is a game that ends, you know, 24-17, and he's passed for 180 yards and didn't give the ball away and didn't take too many sacks and like passed for 1 touchdown and ran for 4. I don't know. We've seen that a lot. Like, I don't think they're demanding that Justin Fields, you know, take over games and let's get Justin Fields to 90 rushing yards and let's, you know, we're not getting the full Justin Fields go win us a ball game experience just yet. Mm-hmm. So I can't get there.
All right, let's go to your next topic here, which also is a quarterback centric one.
Yeah, this was originally just a Drake May topic, but then I think it's fun to expand it to Drake May and Spencer Rattler. And that is just, you know, first of all, how fun is New England's offense going to be with May at the controls? And then to what extent can Spencer Rattler actually keep the Saints kind of on schedule and useful for fantasy purposes? And we can start with May. Both of these guys, by the way, fun preseasons, not perfect preseasons. Some really fun moments. May's preseason was, you know, he was going downfield a little bit. Average depth of target was 8.0. Accuracy was not an issue. Didn't give the ball away. We saw the rushing upside. He had 30 plus rushing yards. You look back on the collegiate career in an environment and in a program where we've seen gaudy stats before. 305 passing yards per game, 44 rushing yards per game. We probably get a fair amount of like RPO in the offense, fair number of designed runs for May, and that is really fun. Now, like, it's Houston this week, and that's a good team with a good defense. They're the team that just shut down Josh Allen almost completely, right? But, you know, they got cooked a little bit by Anthony Richardson at the start of the year, by Sam Darnold, Trevor Lawrence to an extent. So we've seen people put up numbers against them. I don't want to, like, not going to make any promises about May that he steps in and he's Jaden Daniels or anything like that. But he does have some fantasy appeal because he's got a real rushing component to his game. And he's got a whole toolbox of skills, right? Like, I think he's really fun. And then Rattler, you know, like, who am I? I watch a lot of really boring, low scoring Big Ten college football. So I can't say that I, you know, watched every snap of Spencer Rattler's career, but it's really good. It's pretty good on paper. It looks pretty good. And then what we got from him in the preseason, man, that guy threw some darts. And I'm sure there were plenty of Saints fans who are like, maybe this guy and not Derek Carr is our quarterback. And then, of course, Derek Carr silenced that a little bit to start the season. But this is going to be interesting. It's probably going to be a multi-game audition for Rattler. And I'm pretty excited to see what this looks like and if he can just keep everything on schedule.
Oh, there for sure is like Saints fans on Twitter that are like, you know, they have a hashtag the agenda. I mean, like, they want to, there's people that want to see Spencer Rattler for sure. So, yeah, it's interesting. We'll start with the Rattler thing before we come back to Drake May, where, like, with Rattler, I think there's a chance that the idea is better than the results because this is still a day three rookie quarterback. And, like, whatever you think about Derek Carr, he is a professional quarterback. You know, there are definitely, he leaves you wanting in some ways, but he's a guy that has played a lot, has seen everything, the whole deal. Rattler certainly is going to be more aggressive. And then I think that at times he's going to get bit by that. This is a matchup too that could go either way, where, you know, we just watched Kirk Cousins pick apart this Bucs defense because they are certainly, they play a bunch of zone coverage behind blitzes, and there are going to be some wide open windows to hit wide receivers. But like Kirk Cousins, again, another veteran, seen it all, been there, done that. Any coverage you want to throw at him, he knows what he's doing. That's a disadvantage, obviously, for Spencer Rattler. But at the same time, I say everything I just said. Don't think I haven't mainlined, you know, the preseason press conference clip of him that's going around on Twitter right now where he says, like, oh, yeah, when Chris Olave is on the field, like, my goal is to get him the ball. I mean, I've fired up that copium, baby. Don't you worry. I've seen it, been there, done that. You know, hopefully Chris Olave is a little healthier. You know, he has been dogging it through a hamstring injury. Hopefully he's healthier. Hopefully Rashid Shaheed still has the same big play upside. Like, the thing is, because this matchup is so good, I'm probably still playing these Saints wide receivers in week six. The thing is, just with Rashid Shaheed specifically, like, we know his floor is literally a stone zero. Like, he's had a zero catch game, and like, that is well within the range of outcomes this week. So I think you kind of have to understand that, especially with a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, I just think, you think of the tendencies that we sometimes get from first-year quarterbacks, and their head is spinning a little bit, and there's a lot to process, and the defense is spending all day trying to confuse you. Sometimes they just lock in on that best player, right? So this might not be bad for Chris Olave if Spencer Rattler has decided, hey, the you know, when in doubt, that is where I'm going with the football. That's a good thing. And sometimes we just, you know, amid confusion and chaos, Rashid Shaheed is down there somewhere, you know, so maybe we get a little bit of that too. And I'm not super optimistic about anybody else necessarily surviving this, outside of Alvin Kamara, but, I think there could be some moments with those two. But again, that really hinges on whether Spencer Rattler against like the junior varsity version of some defenses in the preseason was a real thing. But he made some throws. Like he made some on point downfield, you know, into fairly tight coverage kind of throws that I thought were really impressive.
Yeah. I'll send the tweet to producer Colin so that we can see it on YouTube. But I was having a conversation with Scott Barrett a couple of weeks ago, or a couple of weeks ago. I think it was like 2 days ago. I think it was before the Monday night game. Who knows what time it is? Who knows what time is any of this?
What is time?
What is time, really, truthfully, as a concept? But Rashid Shaheed, yards per route run against zone coverage is way higher than his yards per route run against man coverage. And I think a lot of that is those, like, hey, splitting the two deep safeties, that whole deal. That is the Rashid Shaheed post route. That play, when Scott asked me, what do you think about this? That was my instinct was he's, you know, those post routes against the deep safeties, things like that. The Bucs play the most zone coverage in the league. So if you do want to, you know, think about, hey, Rashid Shaheed can maybe make my lineup this week, that would probably be what you're telling yourself. Quickly back just to Drake May. You know, it's tough just because we don't have a ton of like fantasy options in this. This is almost more of like I will have a much stronger take about and this sounds obvious, but once the game has happened, I think I'll have a much stronger kind of feeling about, okay, Jalen Polk is a sleeper, or like, is the running game a little bit more in sync with the pass game? I know that sounds easy to say after the game, but it's just, we don't have a lot of things like, okay, we have fantasy starters in New Orleans. We don't really have that in New England. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I actually really like this segment, because I can just ask questions and it's not expected that I'll that I have the answer to them, right? Like, I don't know. I honestly, I don't know what this week looks like for Josh Allen, and I sure as don't know what this week looks like for Drake May. But I'm interested. This is much more fun than for the first time this year, I sort of can't wait to get through, you know, the full version of the Patriots game. And that has not been the case to this point in the season, right? I've seen quite, like, no disrespect to Jacoby Brissett, good pro, all that. I don't need to see much more Patriots football in that version of the offense. But I am really excited to see Drake May, because he's a dual threat guy. He's pretty creative. He presents that rushing TD upside in any given week. And now we have to sort of not that we'd even settled on a receiving hierarchy in New England. It could have been anybody pulling down 61 yards and six catches each week and leading the team in receiving. Right. But like, I don't know what it looks like now. Maybe there is more Jalen Polk.
Yeah, he's played a lot the last 2 weeks. And like I said on yesterday's show, he's a guy that you should probably just stick on the end of your bench and sort of see what happens. Yeah. Listen, there's only six games in that 1 o'clock window. I did the breakdown of what the screens look like here. They're definitely getting a screen. Okay, they're definitely getting a screen, the Patriots, Texans, and they're going to get the sound on maybe more than the damn Browns and Eagles, I'll tell you that. Okay. Yeah, the Titans are coming off by this 1 p.m. slate. Jeez. Okay, speaking of the AFC South, your final point, the final burning question you have to talk through here heading into week six, Andy Behrens.
Yeah, this is just strictly a fantasy question, and that is, what is next for Tank Bigsby? That guy has rushed for 191 yards on 20 carries over the last 2 weeks, and he's just making people miss every kind of way, right? He's doing it with power. He's doing it with stiff arms. He's making them miss the traditional way, and like it's a challenging matchup against the Bears, but they will also kind of let a running back get home occasionally too. Like Tony Pollard looked very good against Chicago. Chuba Hubbard had a big play against Chicago. They didn't fully stop Kyron Williams. They certainly didn't stop Jonathan Taylor. They've been very good against the pass. It's a good defense. But I think there can be some opportunities again if Bigsby is going to get 10 or 12 touches. And you know, it has been frustrating that so far, like whenever Bigsby makes a little bit of noise, and he was super noisy last week, Doug Peterson will just say, oh, Travis Etienne is our guy. He's got a shoulder, you know? Yeah. So maybe that's it. Like maybe this is fully Travis Etienne's backfield. If he's fully healthy, I think that's wild, because Bigsby has just no disrespect even to Etienne, but Bigsby's looked awesome this year and these last 2 weeks in particular. So I am, you know, if I can separate my Bears fandom from just being like a fantasy guy who's scooped up Bigsby in a bunch of places, I am super eager to see what it looks like this week.
Oh, I don't buy the Doug Peterson talk for 1 minute. And I think we reacted to that on the recap show, right? When I said the coach speak index, 35% reliability on depth chart, things like that for old Doug Peterson. Dude, I'll take that number and notch it down in the context of what I said earlier about the Jags, that they are one of the biggest dumpster fires, you know, and like potential careening towards a reset franchise right now. I mean, Doug Peterson is, I think, firmly on the hot seat. Just was listening to an interview with John Shipley, who covers the Jaguars, does a great job. And he was talking about the fact that Shad Khan, for the first time ever as a Jaguars owner, came into this year saying, like, I have expectations. We need to be in the playoffs. Like, not a, okay, cool, we went 9-7. Like, I feel pretty good about that. Like, no, he wants to, he thinks this is the best Jaguars team that's ever been assembled under his ownership. Sure. And be that as what it may, like, that's the expectation from the owner. The coach is not currently tracking to meet that. I don't think they can sit there and say, like, yeah, Travis is our guy, especially when this is not the coach that drafted Travis Etienne. That was Urban Meyer, because he didn't get Kadarius Toney, which whole another conversation to unpack there. What a weird sentence to say. Yeah. But anyways, yeah. So I think there is a non-0%. I honestly think it's maybe just, I would say right now, based on what we've seen, like 60-40, that Etienne gets usurped by Bigsby in terms of touches in the backfield on a given week, you know, this week and going forward, if he continues to produce.
Yeah, he's seen a little bit of action as a receiver. I don't think he goes away entirely. I don't think the Jaguars are looking to, you know, most teams are not looking to feed one guy the ball all of the time. But I don't know. I don't know how you can look at what Bigsby has done over the last couple of weeks. And like, included in that are some runs where it wasn't a given that he was going to score that touchdown, or it wasn't a given that he was going to get those, you know, 17 yards or 60 yards or whatever. I mean, he has made some people miss along the way in ways that, you know, ETN and many backs will not. Has he just put together a couple of nice moments? It's possible. He's not touching the ball that much. You know, I can't say for sure, but we're getting glimmers of something pretty special from him. And if I'm Doug Peterson, I sure as hell want to see more.
Two final notes on this backfield. And then just one overall note before we toss the break here. One, shout out to us ranking at Yahoo Fantasy. We have Tank Bigsby at running back 23 and Travis Etienne at running back 24. No notes. Beautiful.
That clears it up.
In the consensus. Yeah, beautiful stuff. The hedge ranking, as I always call it, is one of my favorite. The other thing, though, my second point here, Tank Bigsby is only rostered in 61% of Yahoo leagues. 39% of leagues are absolutely asleep at the wheel. What are we like? What are we doing here? Give me a break. That again, another guy that should be beyond 100% roster. Don't even like, why am I talking about this? He should be on every single roster in every single league. Okay, so
my adult daughter is in a fantasy league for the second time in her life this year, and I told her that I would only help her if they played on Yahoo. So she's been coming over on like waiver night and telling me, and just handing me the phone and being like, okay, do the things, and then I do the things, and Bigsby was our big ad this week, so we're excited about that.
That's good. You're having the same relationship with your daughter in fantasy football as I'm having with my mother. Although as longtime listeners of the podcast know about the Treviso Babes League, did not a lot of updates this year because, as I told Andy off show, the quote from the ladies is, no one is having any fun this year because no one is winning, which, you know, obviously half the people in the league have to be winning, but that does feel like a very 2024 fantasy football vibe. No one is winning. Like, my mom's roster is completely hurt, and she's constantly like, will you just, I shouldn't say this on the show, but she's like, you know, like, can you help me? I'm like, no, I'm an impartial observer. Like, I'm staying out of this mess. But you know, again, that's the way fantasy football is right now. Yeah, so Bigsby definitely should be more rostered. He could be a potential starter for you in this matchup. Many of us have him ranked in that range. Final note just on this game. This is from producer Colin. His prediction is that Doug Peterson does not make it back from London if they lay an egg, because the London trip is a curse for coaches. Robert Sala was the third NFL coach who's been fired after a loss in London. Dennis Allen in 2014. Joe Philbin in 2015. Could it be Doug Peterson in 2024? Probably not, but it at least should be on your radar.
What a fun marketing move that would be for the NFL if those really were the stakes to the London game. Like, only the winner comes home.
Yeah, people are watching. People are watching, that's for sure. All right, let's toss to our first break. When we come back, we'll talk through three matchups that Andy says deserve your attention right after this. All right, Andy, three matchups that you say, the arbiter of attention, these deserve the people's attention out there. And I got to say, your first one here, Washington at Baltimore. I'm looking at that 1 p.m. schedule, and I'm thinking, you know, I always say, what's on my main TV? What's on the solo TV beyond the four box there? I'm thinking this one might have to get the big screen here, Washington at Baltimore, which I would not have said, 5 weeks ago.
Oh, that's a great point. But at this point, like, Washington is basically must-watch stuff, week in and week out. And in this one, we get the overall QB1 and the overall QB2 in fantasy.
Not bad.
They are stylistically pretty similar. I mean, nobody is exactly Lamar Jackson, but Jaden Daniels can do a pretty good impression. We're talking about the only two quarterbacks who have already hit 300 rushing yards on the season, which is, you know, it's like a threshold that very few quarterbacks are going to hit in any given year. And we kind of give you dual threat credit if you get there for a full year and they're already there. But Baltimore has given up over 8 yards per pass attempt. They've given up the second most passing yards per game. Washington has allowed 11 passing touchdowns and they don't have an interception yet, right? Like, we have defenses that will allow some points. We have, you know, Baltimore hasn't exactly met preseason expectations defensively. We have two of the most exciting dual threat quarterbacks that we've seen in a long time. Just one of them is new on the scene. I mean, man, let's go. This is really fun.
Yeah, Baltimore gives up the most passing yards in the league right now. Now, they have also clamped down on some teams like the Bills, most notably, who don't have receivers that can beat you outside. Washington is not deep at wide receiver, but they do have a guy by the name of Terry McLaurin who is quite good at the game of football, and who's playing great football right now. If you look at the air yards among the wide receivers, just wide receivers in Washington, it goes Terry McLaurin 516, Noah Brown is second with 86. Like, this dude is unbelievable in terms of dominating the team, you know, market share of opportunity right now, especially from an air yards perspective. So this would definitely be a game that I'm looking to get Terry McLaurin into lineups. You know, the running backs are definitely in the tougher spot here, right? It's a good run defense there in Baltimore that has definitely maintained, right? They're still one of the best units at defending the run. They're number one in rushing success rate allowed. But still, the fact that we saw last week Joe Burrow in this Bengals passing game really get rolling on Baltimore, we could have a very similar game script here of a potential high scoring matchup. A lot of dudes make it home in fantasy, right? Like, I think Rashad Bateman is a, you know, desperation kind of what the heck flex, but still a player that is on the radar. Zay Flowers is probably a fantasy starter. The tight end room is a mess in Baltimore, but like, I don't know, if you're desperate, you could. You could take a shot at it. Who knows? But this is it's a good game script for the passing offense specifically.
And like, I don't know. We'll see De'Ami Brown get a shot every now and then. I don't want to like overhype this to an extreme, because part of me is also worried that like the Ravens are just going to go back to saying, hey, why don't we just time a possession this thing and give Derrick Henry 30 carries, can't keep him off the field. And then it ends like 24-16 or something. We don't get the game that we want, but there is right now, like all possibilities are on the table. And I'm just really excited to see two of the most exciting quarterbacks in the game.
Yeah. And I also don't want to overhype it to the point. And, you know, like, let's remember, this is, I love what I've seen from Jaden Daniels. This is still a tough test. It's a road game in Baltimore against a defense that has given up a lot of production, but also from a coverage perspective, still throws so much at you from like, they play a little bit of this, a little bit of that, just like they did under Mike McDonald, and they've had these good game plans. So at the same, and you know, obviously we had this whole dialogue about Jaden Daniels last week, first big defensive test in the Browns defense is, for whatever is going on with the Ravens right now, I still overall have more confidence in them than what I've seen out of Cleveland so far, especially because, as I talked about with Nate Tyson on Football 301, you can see them Browns defenders in the second half being like, we know we're not coming back. So like maybe let's take our foot off the gas a little bit. They do not have that same problem in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson under center.
I will also say of the Ravens defense, you know, this is an unusual circumstance in which Jaden Daniels is going to see a defense that sees a guy like him every day, right?
True.
Like they're with Lamar Jackson, and you know, Jaden Daniels is maybe doing like, you know, a 98% solid impression of Lamar Jackson right now, but the Ravens have seen this every day for years. So they're not going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to be stunned by anything that they get from Jaden Daniels in the way that other defenses and individual defenders might.
All right, let's move to the next game here, which also has an NFC East team participating. Detroit Lions at Dallas Cowboys. This is a 4:25 game on Sunday.
Yeah, this is. I'm just kind of throwing a bone to producer Colin here. I know he loves
it. We got to do it every now and
then. When we just rave about the Dallas Cowboys. This is fun. Detroit is often going to make it into this segment, right? Just because it's a high-powered offense. We have Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery coming off bye and headed into like one of the best matchups for running backs. Both defenses have been vulnerable to the pass and to big plays. I actually give a lot of credit to the Cowboys for getting a win last week without Parsons, without Lawrence. You know, it's a defense that has not played well this year and is now without like its best players, and they still get a win. So like, impressive stuff there. This game might be as simple as like just everybody scores and everybody eats in this one. The total is 52.5. So the sports books are expecting a shootout. I'm kind of expecting a shootout. What do we get from, you know, what do we get from the Cowboys receiving core? We know it's CeeDee Lamb. Do we get, you know, do we get another great week from, I don't know, like Rico Dowdle's super involved. I don't know. There's just a lot of points and yards available here. This has the opportunity to be a little bit of a fantasy buffet.
Yeah. Jerry Jones gave, of course, what was like a optimistic, you know, overly indulgent state of like the Cowboys injury report right now. This is from Todd Archer. Jerry Jones said that left tackle Tyler Guyton, who has a knee, has a quote good chance of playing versus Detroit. Micah Parsons is quote iffy, and it's also quote not impossible for Deron Bland to be activated off IR. I'm gonna go ahead and say I don't think Parsons and Deron Bland are gonna play in this game, but regardless of what Jerry says. So this, I mean, the Lions coming off of a bye, I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see about how that offense performs in this game. Producer Colin is a very optimistic Bland plays in the game. We'll see. He was a full participant later on in the week. So we'll see. That would obviously be a big boost to this defense overall. I mean, on the Lions side, Andy, we know what we're doing. We're playing all the guys here.
Yeah.
Even Sam Laporta, who hopefully coming off a bye can be a little healthier. I do think he's just a bit, with Jameson Williams being fully integrated and with the run game being as good as it is, I think he's just the biggest fantasy loser here. It's not a big deal from a real life perspective. Laporta is still a great player, but I just think targets are not going to be as easier to come by for him. But I don't think you have a better option at tight end. So you're still playing Sam Laporta.
Yeah.
So unless you have anything on the Lions, I think the more interesting side of this is on Dallas. Like, what's our temperature on Rico Dowdle? Is Jalen Tolbert an option during bye weeks? Those are kind of the more pressing, I guess, fantasy questions.
Yeah, I think maybe the most interesting fantasy question on the Dallas side is Tolbert, because he, you know, it's I don't know, you're an old, a grizzled old fantasy expert like me, and you've been doing this for a long time. You always think back to like the, you know, Dallas was, they kind of kept Miles Austin simmering for like 4 years, and then they really, then, you know, they unveiled him, and all of a sudden Miles Austin was this superstar level receiver. Not to put all that on Jalen Tolbert, but my God, he looked really good last week. And every game this season, there's been a play where you're like, oh, who's that? Oh, it's Tolbert again. You know, that has been a recurring theme. He's already pretty much to this point in the year, we're five games in, he's matched his production from last year. He looks great. I've seen some people surface the fact that Dak had sort of raved about him in the offseason too. So he got some offseason buzz. And like, if that guy emerges, remember, you know, Brandon Cooks last year in the second half was a top 20 fantasy receiver, and he just scored every week. And I think the version of Jalen Tolbert that we saw last week looks a little bit more dynamic than anything that we have seen from Brandon Cooks in a while. So there is certainly room for this offense to produce a second got to start him fantasy wideout. And Tolbert looks like he could be that guy. I think, you know, as to the running back question, it just seems like this is now heavily leaning toward Dowdle. I don't know that the Dallas running game is ever a thing that we need to like really, oh man, gotta lean on my Dallas back. That's gonna go well, in part because the defense just seems so shaky at the moment. But yeah, for me, Tolbert and his potential emergence is the real story.
Let's move to the final game you have here. That's the Sunday night affair, Cincinnati
this is
Bengals.
Such a terrible game. I can't believe it.
I mean, not kind of. It kind of is from like a record. Well, the Bengals have a bad record, but they could definitely go on a run because their offense is so good, and they're going to be one. Dude, they're going to be one of the best teams in fantasy all year because their defense is capital A atrocious, and their offense is playing great right now. Now that like it's so funny, man. Like we go all off season think about like, yeah, this is probably T. Higgins's last year. You know, I mean, there's definitely a gap between him and Jamar Chase. They got to get the Chase deal done. Like, you know, they Yoshivas is emerging and they drafted Jermaine Burton. And then you get into the season. And then as soon as T. Higgins is healthy, it's like, yeah, they can't really, they can't run an offense without T. Higgins. Like, what are we talking about? Like, they need to just sign both of these. They need to sign all three of these guys forever and just let the rest of the roster be what it is. I realize that maybe that's not smart team building and probably not what's going to happen, but their offense is flying right now. Their defense stinks. And then the Giants are the Giants. So I don't know. Yeah. Tell me why you wanted to talk about this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, you basically hit on it. If we're just chasing fantasy points, we gotta love this game. This is really fun. I don't know that, you know, either of these teams are gonna necessarily define the 2024 NFL season. Although I will say, if you made me name one quarterback right now who I think can get to 5,000 yards this year, it's Joe Burrow for the reasons that you outlined. Right, they're just gonna be in game scripts where they gotta chuck it, and he's great, and his receivers are like, that's probably the, you know, I'm going to stop myself before I say it is the best duo in the league, but it is in the conversation for like best receiving duo in the league. Right. And on both sides of this game, if Malik Nabers is able to play, he didn't practice on Wednesday. Dable said he's doing better. So I hope Malik Nabers is able to play. If he is, we get Chase, we get Higgins, we get Malik Nabers, we get, emerging superstar Wandale Robinson. That's a joke. I don't mean that he's an emerging superstar, but he gets a lot of targets. Cincinnati has allowed last four games, they've given up over 32 points per game. It's like 32.3 points per game, have not stopped anything or anyone. New York's a weird defense in that they lead the league in sacks. But they've also allowed one of the highest passer ratings against. They're allowing an opponent completion percentage of like 72%. So if they don't get you down, good things happen. And then I guess the other thing I would point out here is that we don't yet know Devin Singletary's status. It was trending pretty well, but Tyrone Tracy looked awesome last week. Better than, you know, he sort of met the most breathless hype that we heard in the preseason. And I kind of rolled my eyes at that a little bit because I don't know. I saw him for quite a stretch of time at Iowa when he was a wide receiver. And I just, man, he made so many guys miss last week. And
yeah, he was sick.
You know, I talked about it earlier with Tank Bigsby, you know, breaking off some runs that are just simply not available to every ball carrier in the league. And Tracy was doing that same sort of stuff. So I don't know how you go back to giving him like four touches a game after what we saw last week.
Oh, there's no way you can. I think, especially because Tyrone Tracy didn't look like a converted wide receiver out there. He looked like a real deal running back. Like, especially hitting the holes, like in zone runs and stuff like that. I mean, there's no shot. And you know, he could definitely be the rookie year Damian Pierce of this year, right? Where he kind of just eventually takes over over a job, doesn't fully displace a veteran. But who was the veteran alongside Pierce in that backfield? It wasn't actually Singletary. He was taken in the second year, but I don't remember the Davis Mills Texans. I'm trying to block that out of my brain.
That's driving me crazy.
It's driving me crazy too. So I'm gonna look that up. But just
I have a parade of old Texans in my head right now. I have Ben Tate and Steve Slayton in my head, and I'm too old.
Well, I mean, you're not going to get any argument with your, from me on that. I mean, actually, there's really there was like Rex Burkhead, Royce Freeman, Dari Ungwale, who's still
Rex
on
Burkhead
the team.
Out of my mind. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. So again, that's definitely maybe Devin Singletary is better than those dudes, right? So
yeah.
Anyways, all that being said, Tyrann Tracy, I think, could be the Dameon Pierce of this year. Get rocking and rolling, continue to be like kind of an every week option in fantasy, even if he doesn't fully displace Devin Singletary. Just depends on what the split could be there. Either way, I think even if Singletary is active in this game, I think Tracy's on the starting radar just because the Bengals defense is so, so bad. My second point on the Giants here, I'm not saying that this offense is better without Malik Nabers, because that is stupid. That would be a just a dumb thing to say. I do think, though, this team is coming off, in terms of week five offenses, they were fifth in offensive success rate, and that was without Malik Nabers, and it was against the Seahawks defense that's dealing with injuries, and I think kind of grappling with what they want to be under Mike McDonald when they don't have like a guy like Byron Murphy out there, especially fitting the run. That was an issue in the lighter boxes and things like that. Regardless, it was just a good offensive performance with guys like Darius Slayton and guys like Wandell Robinson. I'm a huge Wandell Robinson hater. I've admitted that just because I think he's kind of a fake wide receiver. But he is a useful player in an NFL offense. Slayton, all roads always lead back to Darius Slayton. No matter what the Giants try to do in their wide receiver room, they try to like put him on the trade block, try to cut him. He always ends up playing a big role for them. He's not a perfect player, but he's another useful player.
Shoot, they drafted a guy who was supposed to be a better version of Darius Slayton, right? And it's not even close with Hyatt.
Tis not going well. So I'm not saying that this is a better offense without Malik Nabers, but I think it's a better offense when they're just not forcing the ball to Malik Nabers and like, man, we just got to get him 15 targets every single game off the bus. That's not a good way to play a healthy offense. It's a good way to run for your fantasy wide receiver. It's not good for the offense overall. My favorite little ratio of if your wide receiver number one has more targets than your team scores points, that's not a good thing. And the Giants have approached that ratio in several games this year. So all that being said, like, I think if Nabers comes back, hopefully they can actually just use him as a normal number one wide receiver, let him be a stud and a playmaker, but also get some of these other guys involved. So maybe we do continue to see a better version of the Giants offense throughout the course of the season.
This is also, again, there's not going to be that many spots in the year when throughout the buys that you maybe want to start Daniel Jones. And Daniel Jones has a long history of face planting in games that should be good spots for Daniel Jones. We're in one again. Like, the Cincinnati defense is something that we will be trying to pick on all year. And we did learn with Jones last week that, you know, he can have a decent day even if Nabers isn't in the mix. And Slayton was really good. So this is, you know, do with this information what you will, but this is as friendly a spot as Daniel Jones is gonna find his way into this year.
Yeah, I'm just gonna read a line from your waiver wire column this week about Daniel Jones. Just again, for the new Barons folks, this is what you can expect. That this is that other 5% I mentioned. It's that time, friends. Once each season, it's worth adding Jones to your fantasy roster simply to be reminded of the full range of possibilities in the human experience: joy, despair, hilarity, etc. Yeah, it's about that time for Daniel Jones right now. I will just say, last note on this game, because we didn't discuss it, if Zach Moss doesn't play, Chase Brown should definitely be in your fantasy lineups. You mentioned that the Giants defense, the pass rush is cooking. I think overall it's starting to become a better and better unit, but still they've been bottom 10 run defense this year. So Brown should probably be a guy in your lineups this week if there's no Zach Moss.
Yeah, it's a really good call, and Brown has looked great.
All right, Andy, appreciate you, buddy. Good luck to your Bears in London. Hopefully they can. I'm not saying I want Doug Peterson to lose his job, but hopefully they smash around the Jags, and we can continue to feel good about the Jags and Coach Despair there in London. What a tough scene.
This is the first time I can remember that, like, you know, we're going to be in fantasy football live. That's going to be happening, and I'm going to be fully distracted by the Bears game. Like, I don't know how this is going to go.
You're not following that no extra tabs rule, I'll tell you that, on Hell Sunday no. morning this Hell year. No. Sorry to the production staff of Fantasy Football Live. So, yeah, if you don't watch Fantasy Football Live, tune in this week for sure on yahoosports.com on the Yahoo Sports YouTube page to see Andy tilt the Bears live. Or maybe it'll just be him gloating all through the second half of that game as they're blowing out the Jags.
What I fear is that Fitz is going to tee me up a couple times and I'll be like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. No, nah, whatever. You don't have to worry about that. You're a pro. You'll figure something out. You'll filibuster. All right. Thanks again, Andy. Appreciate you, buddy. We're going to see you on the Sunday recap after all the dust settles from those early games. Meanwhile, we're going to take a break, and Tara Roberts will join the show to discuss her make or break players for week 6 right after this. All right, we're back, and as I always am here on the second half of the weekly preview, happy to be joined by our good friend Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I'm doing good. I'm a happy camper. I heard you talking on the pod earlier about Drake London potentially being the highest target leader this year. So I'm in a good mood here since my boy is succeeding. Good week. Injuries are injuries, but overall, feeling good in week 6.
I'm glad that we somehow managed to mention the Drake London stuff like every time we have you on the pod, just as a level. So, well, now I'm enjoying it. After week 1, maybe didn't enjoy it that we like randomly shoehorned Drake London, even though he's never on the outline. But I'm glad that we continue to talk about it because, hey, things are looking up for our guy, Drake London, who, yeah, I did make a prediction that he's going to lead the NFL in receptions. Pretty excited about how he was used last week. I'm always also excited to talk through your make or break players as I am every single week here on this segment. And look, this is not, for the people at home, a strict start sit. We're trying to kind of look at some underlying situations and maybe see if this player that's either on the rise or maybe has had a disappointing couple of weeks here, these make or break players, are they going to make or break your lineup? We're going to try to decide that with these specific players. We actually have 3 guys at the start here that are all involved in the London game. So that's nice, Terry. You'll be able to get your either victory laps or your tears out of the way early if these guys do or don't work out based on how you're going to go. Let's start with Caleb Williams, though, the Bears quarterback.
Yeah, hopefully we don't base it on last week's London game and we get a little more offensive stability in this one. But Caleb Williams this week has a very enticing matchup with the Jags this week. But as enticing as it is, it makes him one of those borderline players that now we're looking at him as a streaming option, maybe him bouncing him up against guys like Daniel Jones, who still has to worry about Malik Nabers coming back. Caleb Williams has a full, healthy arsenal of players, and he is coming off his most complete performance of the season, showing efficiency, turnovers weren't an issue, completed 20 of his 29 passes for over 300 yards, 2 touchdowns, added a little bit on the ground as well. Overall, just a fantastic outing for him. And this wasn't the first time we'd seen him kind of on this trend. Things are kind of trending upward. You know, even in the previous matchup, there wasn't a ton of volume, but it feels like he's kind of making a turn here where we can rely on him to not be less of a rookie here. He's making that push for having more experience and we can turn to him and feel a little bit more comfortable. And now he's got this fantastic matchup continuing here with the Jags. And we're looking at him and the Jags defense. Obviously, it is one of the most favorable matchups for opposing quarterbacks here. They allow the 3rd most fantasy points to the position. This is absolutely a matchup where we could see another top 10 performance out of Caleb Williams. So looking at him, I feel like he's make or break, but it's one of those ones that I'm starting to get more and more comfortable if you're having to turn to someone for a streaming option this week.
I love this call. I actually have Caleb Williams. I think I'm the highest on him in terms of the rankers here at Yahoo this week. I have him as kind of on that fringe of a quarterback, 1 high-end QB2, certainly someone that I think you can chase the upside with. There's a couple reasons to be excited. You mentioned that the Jaguars are not a good defense. They also play man coverage at the highest rate in the league, or one of the 2 highest rates in the league so far this year. We know that when quarterbacks face man coverage, if they are scramblers, that can incentivize them to take off a little bit more. Caleb is definitely not, you know, Josh Allen or one of these type, not a Jaden Daniels type, but he is a guy who will, when the moment calls for it, he can move, he can take off. So I think we could see some pretty decent rushing out of Caleb Williams in this matchup. And then even more exciting is the fact that they kind of stripped down their passing game last week. We saw them go strictly 11 personnel for the most part, really leaned into that, and they only played the big three at wide receiver. You know, we cut out the DeAndre Carter snaps. Okay, we don't need any of that anymore. We didn't see a bunch of Gerald Everett on the field. You know, they mostly just played Rome Odunze, Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore. DJ Moore really got going. We saw a couple of moments from Odunze, and just again, it was Caleb Williams by far best performance. Well, I get that it was against the Panthers, Tara. We all know that. Jaguars certainly have some better players than the Panthers up front, at least. But in the secondary, that is an area that they can attack. So, yeah, I like your call about Caleb Williams here, not just for this week, honestly, Tara, but it's important that we continue to see development from Caleb just because we care so much about so many players in this offense.
Exactly. I mean, when we were talking about these guys, you mentioned 11 personnel. I think that kind of goes directly into Rome Odunze and looking for more consistency from him as well. It's funny from a receiver's perspective. I feel more comfortable, and I guess it feels weird to say that because I feel like maybe it's usually the reverse. Even if you have like a quarterback that's struggling a little bit, you can say, okay, well, maybe I'm not starting this quarterback, but I do feel still a little bit comfortable with their pass catchers. Like, let's say Trevor Lawrence. I have been rather uncomfortable with Trevor Lawrence for a while now. Last week we did see that uptick from him, but still was out there saying, okay, I like Brian Thomas as a flex option. We were seeing a little bit more from Christian Kirk. Mm-hmm. So the pass catchers, you know, you weren't afraid to lean into them as much. Oddly enough, I feel like this is the reverse situation for me. I feel more comfortable with Caleb Williams as a streaming option than I do for some of these secondary pass catchers outside of DJ Moore. How about you?
I feel the same way, just because I like your point there about, look, Williams is looking good. I think, again, Rome Odunze is out there a ton, but you just look at week five for these guys, and like I mentioned, it was only those players on the field, which is good, constricting it to these guys who all ran 31 routes, Moore, Odunze, Keenan Allen, according to Fantasy Points data. That's good, but it's still pretty wide distribution there between the three guys. Mm-hmm. Like, DJ Moore leads the team in targets with 8, which isn't a huge lead from the 6 for Odunze and 6 for Keenan Allen. There's definitely some pretty severe splits between games with and without Keenan Allen for Rome Odunze, who's primarily playing that X receiver position. Like, he's out there a ton, and he's playing a little bit of everything, which is good for the rookie long term, I think, to learn all three positions. But it's also not like he's not necessarily specializing in one area either. So I would say that makes his role a little amorphous right now, I guess is probably the best way to say it. It's a little more difficult to pin down. So my confidence in DJ Moore is rising up a little bit. I don't know that he's necessarily going to be a wide receiver one. He could probably be like a low end two, maybe a little bit boom bust, but definitely right now I feel like both Odunze and Allen are not necessarily clear-cut fantasy starters, which sucks, Tara, because this would be the matchup to use them in confidently.
Yeah, it really does. And the fact that it's the matchup is kind of what makes me lean a little bit more into Odunze as a possibility this week. But the volatility is just a big issue. Mm. And then you also look at the types of quarterbacks that have succeeded against the Jags. It's guys like Tua Tagovailoa, Josh Allen, CJ Stroud, Joe Flacco. These are high volume passers. We don't really know if we can get that guaranteed volume out of Caleb Williams, and he's got the rushing upside and mobility to potentially capitalize on this and multiple weapons. But if the volume doesn't appear the way that we need it to, it kind of, you know, the guy that I feel like it might affect the most there is Rome Odunze. And I love him. Again, not the primary target here. Volume inconsistency has been an issue. He has shown that massive upside. We had that week 3 situation where he, you know, delivered and actually outperformed DJ Moore, added a rushing touchdown, oddly enough, good receiving yards. But aside from that, you mentioned, Keenan Allen's presence having an issue there with the volume for him. The floor has been extremely, extremely low. So we've got that peak of an upside. We've got that, you know, that like, okay, we know that like top 12 technically does exist with him. He can get there. But the floor has just been, it's just been absolutely abysmal for him. So even if the volume picks up here, Odunze is just so volatile here. You know, DJ Moore we lean into, but if there's a game where one of these secondary pass catchers, maybe even a Keenan Allen, if one of them can step up and provide value in addition to DJ Moore, I do feel like it's that week. If, you know, that instills just a little bit of confidence there.
Yeah, Odunze right now is still 73% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I do think he's kind of on that wide receiver three radar-ish. But it's very boom bust for sure. You're hoping he can get in the end zone in a good matchup. You're hoping that that chemistry and timing with him and Caleb Williams continues to develop. Regardless, though, in the long run, the Bears play this game in London against Jacksonville. Then they go on bye. Then they come back and they get Washington and Arizona. Like, these are two matchups coming out of the bye week where I think if we see some good signals from Odunze in this game, you know, let's say he picks up a couple big plays, even if you don't start him this week, you're hoping he comes out of his bye week, one, healthier, because he's been dealing with a lot of injuries to start the year, and two, that he comes in, you know, with off that post-bye rookie bump. We always talk about that on this show. Like, these rookies, once they get out of their bye week, they're usually more integrated. They have more time on task. They also have a couple of, like, just the coaches have a time to get in there and see, like, okay, this guy's doing this well. Let's see what we can do in this way. They just understand these rookies more now. They've seen them in the NFL, and they have a week off to sort of dial them into the game plan. So hopefully that is the time on the other side of the bye, if we get some good moments here, to start using a guy like Rome Odunze. I want to go to another player that you have on this list from this very game here, Tank Bigsby. Andy and I talked a little bit about him at the beginning part of this show. I'm going to task you with finding more clarity on this situation than Andy and I did. But before we do that, like, just kind of unload your thoughts here about Tank Bigsby and where he's at.
I think he's heading in a positive direction. I think we do need to keep, you know, we need to kind of gut check ourselves on this one, because a lot of times we get these backup running backs that start to really push for it. I know we've gotten that with Braylon Allen and Breece Hall, and we get overly excited sometimes and lean more into it than we should. But what makes me feel a little bit more comfortable with this is that it's not a secret that the Jags have consistently said that they would like to not have such aggressive volume on Travis Etienne. So him dealing with a shoulder injury probably presented an opportunity for them to say, okay, I mean, we've got you, you're playing. We're not completely saying, like, we're going to sit you and you're going to be out, but we're kind of going to limit volume on you a little bit. We think that Tank can step in there, handle a little bit more of the workload. The problem here is that we've got a situation where we know they want to reduce volume, and Tank stepped in and he looked fantastic. And that's a dramatic turn from last year, where they wanted him to be more within that offense, and they just completely lost confidence to the point where he was just being outplayed by Darnus Johnson. But now he steps in, has performed extremely well. Efficiency has been great. And I really do think there's a meaningful role for him within this offense. And when I look at the situation, I think that this could easily be a very fairly evenly split committee with two very clear roles. Tank Bigsby, although he does have, like, he doesn't have brick hands, right? He's perfectly capable of being a three down back here. But the Jags might want to split this and say, okay, we like Tank Bigsby on the ground. We think he's more effective. We want him on early downs. We want him on goal line opportunities. And we also still want to involve Travis Etienne because we love the pass catching upside that he has. He's been consistently outperforming. I mean, you know, Tank Bigsby's first catch of the year was last week, and it was fantastic, but it's just one. The volume has consistently been there for Travis Etienne. So the backfield moving forward, it makes sense that they would continue to push forward with Bigsby and continue to give him a strong amount of work on the ground. The problem with that is, in terms of us trying to figure out how this affects him from a fantasy perspective, you got to look at the game script. So if he's going to be an early down goal line kind of back, we want to catch him in those opportunities where the game's going to be competitive, where they're not going to have to abandon the run, where there's going to be plenty of touchdown opportunities for him at the goal line. And you look at this matchup with Chicago and Chicago's defense, and they get this weird juxtaposition with the matchup where, yardage wise, this is an advantageous matchup for the ground game. So we could get strong volume and could see Bigsby on the ground rushing for nearly 100 yards, but there might not be a lot of touchdown opportunities with that, because if the pass attack can't really keep this game going in a back and forth, and they're not able to, let's say that Caleb Williams just truly exploits this Jags offense, they jump up early, the Jags are trying to chase points, maybe pass volume flies, and then in that situation, Bigsby becomes a little bit of an afterthought, or maybe a slight disadvantage there. So this one, the matchup, I feel like the role could be very defined here. But the matchup makes it difficult because we're very dependent on how this game, the back and forth goes, and what Caleb Williams can do against this Jags defense to kind of predict what the game script is going to be.
Yeah, right now the Bears are a 1.5 point home favorite in London, home being obviously quote unquote. So it's the right type of theoretical close game that we should want to use Tank Bigsby. And you're right to point out the matchup here. Obviously, the Bears defense is good, but they're significantly better against the pass than the run. Right now, in terms of dropback success rate, they're the fourth best defense in terms of rushing success rate. They're not bad, but they're like 17th. So you probably do want to try to establish the run a little bit on them. You don't want to get into a game script where you're having Trevor Lawrence drop back against that pass rush and getting smoked back there or making mistakes throwing into the secondary. That's been an issue, obviously. It's been a long-standing issue with Trevor Lawrence in his career, but it's certainly been an issue this year as well, especially as they're trying to push the ball down the field more. So I feel like putting the ball in Tank Bigsby's hands, especially now that he's clearly much more trusted than he was last year, makes a lot of sense. So I said I wanted you to kind of bring some clarity to the situation here, Tara, because when Andy and I talked about Bigsby in the first half of the show, I noted that us goofballs that rank at Yahoo have Tank Bigsby as running back 23 and Travis Etienne as running back 24, which is pretty much like super not helpful.
Yeah.
Because it's the total hedge ranking. I think that if I had to start one of these two guys this week, I think they're probably both like in the flex territory range. That's kind of what I'm implying here by the ranks. But
yeah,
I just want to throw a few guys out there and you tell me, you know, my favorite game, this guy that or this guy or that guy, and tell me if you like Tank Bigsby over any of these five names that I'm about to throw out here. Rhamondre Stevenson, J.K. Dobbins, Chase Brown, Rico Dowdle, and Bucky Irving. Does Tank make it into your lineup over any of those five guys?
All of them except for Bucky Irving, who is another another exact same situation there. Oddly enough, again, actually very similar as well. And then maybe that's kind of like the split that we can potentially see, right? Because they've got a similar thing going on where they're leaning into Rashad White more through the pass and Bucky Irving is kind of pushing his way up and it's working out to be a little bit of a committee there. And I feel like Bucky is at a slight disadvantage. Now again, if for some reason Rashad White dealing with an injury can't go, obviously that changes things. But assuming they're both good, Bucky is the one that I do think that I would probably lean a little bit more into Tank Bigsby in that situation. But the other guys, I just feel a lot more comfortable with. And I think I'm the low person on Tank Bigsby, which is weird because I'm speaking positively about him here with Make or Break, but it's borderline. I mean, I think RB2, borderline, yeah, you know, potential flex option here. They're all kind of in that same similar range where a lot of these guys in terms of injury situations are what's going to affect me moving him up and down.
Yeah, and I think the guys behind him in the ranks, you know, like the Tyron Tracys, the Trey Sermons, the Jerome Fords, the Rashad White, Javonte Williams, like I think all of those guys, maybe with the exception of Tyron Tracy, if we get clarity that Devin Singletary is not going to play, then I think, yeah, Tyron Tracy over Tank Bigsby. But maybe that's like the line of the, okay, these are the type of players. If you're considering them, like we like Bigsby more, maybe more than those guys. It's just we're not quite at the point where we need to take more established starters out for Bigsby, but one more game might be enough to say, okay, no, he's clearly the running back one here. Like let's set this and forget this.
Exactly. If we get one more week out of this where he is out, you know, if he outsnaps or outrushes Travis Etienne and we get that switch there, I can lean into it, especially if the Jags continue to show progress for it. It's possible. Maybe they come out there and they can handle the Chicago defense well. We see just like a glimmer of promise there from Trevor and say things are maybe turning around. And if that happens, I can absolutely lean into Bigsby.
Yeah, there's also a chance that Doug Peterson gets left behind in the UK. So there's also that. So a lot of range of outcomes here for the Jacksonville Jaguars. He would definitely not be the first, as we noted earlier in the show. Okay, talk about make or break. Talk about volatility. All these words we've said so far in this segment, I don't know that many players personify those words than our guy George Pickens here, who's the next player you want to talk about. Before I throw this to you, Tara, I should just note, like, George Pickens had himself a day on the old X machine here, on the Twitter machine. You know, reporters obviously asking him a lot of questions about what's going on this week, you know, the lower snaps, you know, the black eye paint thing he did with the open effing always, which I still feel like, why do we order the words that way? The penalties, running routes, lazy, the effort stuff. He's and just really, I didn't have like a lot of great responses to it, in my opinion. So, look, he's definitely in an interesting spot with his own team. From a fantasy perspective, what the hell do we do about that?
Yeah, that's funny. If he was playing for like Mike McCarthy and you start complaining like this, then you say, hey, you know, this is the squeaky wheel game and they're just going to feed him and make him be quiet and be happy.
Yeah.
But Arthur Smith, like, I don't, he's rather defiant here. So we maybe can't approach it from such a positive perspective here. And I hate that because I like George Pickens and he's the clear wide receiver one of that offense. But again, it's a precarious situation where volume can be a little iffy, a little volatile here. In the beginning of the season just really hasn't been very kind to George Pickens, unfortunately. You know, the Steelers are looking fantastic. We feel positive about this turnaround for Justin Fields. At the same time, you know, George Pickens is suffering over here with maybe the Deontay Johnson treatment of before where he can't catch a touchdown. It's just not happening. He's been inconsistent, dependent on the matchup here. And some of these matchup struggles are, you know, understandable. We got to give him a break in terms of his early season production here sometimes. You know, struggling against Denver, that's excusable. We throw that out, right? You have an excellent game against Indianapolis with over 100 yards. You did that. That's what we expected. So, while the early season is not fantastic for him, I don't feel like there's anything that's kind of out of line in terms of expectations for him. And we look at this Pittsburgh offense and say, this is an offense that maybe we can say, okay, in difficult matchups, George Pickens is going to face some difficulty in terms of his production. In fine matchups, he should be able to take advantage of it. And this week he has a perfectly fine matchup against the Las Vegas Raiders. Hate to pick on the Raiders. I feel like I pick on the Raiders quite frequently. But they have allowed, let's do it. I mean, the fantasy points that they have allowed to opposing receivers doesn't actually paint the full picture of how the Raiders have been struggling, because the Raiders have faced offenses with a lot of passing struggles. So when you look at just the raw numbers of the Raiders, you might get bamboozled into thinking that their defense is not that bad. We see Max Crosby out there being a menace and whatnot. And so they've got talent, right? And they've been able to hold up, but they haven't been able to do so against elite players. And George Pickens is absolutely one of those guys. So when you look at the underlying metrics here, this is a good matchup for George Pickens. And I feel like it could finally be the week where he catches that first touchdown and he doesn't go touchdown free for the entire season. And he can surpass 100 receiving yards again. So, the upside is there. I have the optimism, but again, it's just the level of volatility that he has had. He's been like a little bit of an Amari Cooper light without the touchdown. So I can understand the frustration for him here early on in this season.
Yeah, the tough part for Pickens is that that game against the Broncos, he should have scored a touchdown. He also should have hauled in like another long pass. Both were called back due to penalty, which was unfortunate. But the volatility is no doubt been there, even if that like kind of two catch for 29 yards doesn't tell the full story there. The problem is that we know, like, we literally saw the floor last week, which is he's beefing with the team, the lack of effort. He plays 59% of the routes, or he plays 59% of the snaps. And he catches 3 for 26. And even in this matchup, that is present, right? Like, just because of all of the, whatever you want to call them, off-field factors here, like that risk is present, which is just a bummer because I thought he was playing such good football. I was ready to, like, you know, really go all in on just kind of how he was playing as an individual isolated perspective. His perception charting to start the year was really, really good. And then it's just like the same old nonsense is kind of like dogging him here, which is just super unfortunate. The Raiders are definitely better pass defense than a rush defense, but you mentioned some of that's opponent driven. They no longer have Christian Wilkins, who's going to be going on IR. That's a big blow to the middle of their defense. I think this is a good game for Justin Fields to get on track. It would just be nice if we could count on his number one receiver, which I feel like we can't do. So I think we did a good job that kind of painting the full range of outcomes with George Pickens. So for overall, like, on our rankings, he's a guy that's in the wide receiver 3 zone. He's kind of in the, ironically, He's right ahead of Amari Cooper, who you mentioned, another very boom bust player. Jameson Williams is right ahead of him. He is another very boom bust player. Like, that's kind of the range. Dontavian Wicks is right there, definitely a boom bust player, as we saw last week. So yeah, it's like that's sort of the range that George Pickens is in. So typically for me, Tara, if I'm going to start one of these guys, I also want to have like a secure high floor player in my wide receiver two spot if this guy's going to be my three. We'll see. I have George Pickens on one roster, and ironically, he was my wide receiver four in the draft. My wide receiver three was Amari Cooper, so I don't really know what the hell to do with that. But because I'm just like, I'm eating volatility in that spot, so I don't know. That's generally how I try to approach these situations.
You got a couple good matchups there, so one's gonna hit. It's like a 50-50 chance there.
Yeah, the one I don't start will be the one that hits. You're correct. Yeah. Only one will hit, and it will be whichever one I do not choose. So right now I'm leaning towards George Pickens, which means for all the people with Amari Cooper out there, you should definitely play him because I'm going to screw this decision up. Final player we're discussing here in make or break is an Arizona Cardinals wide receiver, not Marvin Harrison Jr., but Michael Wilson.
Yeah, Michael Wilson, a little bit deeper of a potential make or break here, but I thought he was fun to start with. My theme around make or break was kind of these younger guys here. So Michael Wilson has shown some promise last season. He's popped a little bit early this season as well as he could, because unfortunately for the Cardinals, they've got a situation where Kyler Murray has been fine. There's been no major issues. Mm-hmm. He's been efficient. Completion rating's not an issue. Turnovers are not an issue. But overall, the way that the Cardinals are approaching the game plan just seems to be like, okay, we're not going to go like a massive volume situation. Even last week, I thought we would see an uptick given the matchup in terms of volume for Kyler Murray. And still, it wasn't very excessive. The only matchup where he has thrown for well over 200 yards, 266 yards, was in week two against the LA Rams. Outside of that, the volume has been very low. So it's difficult to see the promise that I am potentially seeing in Michael Wilson here because of the lack of volume. But overall, even with the lack of volume, his involvement in the offense has been very encouraging. And we were kind of concerned in terms of looking at that offense and saying, we've got Marvin Harrison Jr., we've got Trey McBride. So generally speaking, at best, we were looking at Michael Wilson as the third option in here. And you've also got to consider how run heavy they are with James Conner. But when you look at the overall touches from the wide receivers, inclusive of Trey McBride, they're splitting things very evenly in that offense. All of the guys are ranging in that 17 to 20 touches range. They're literally within three touches of each other, looking at Trey McBride and Michael Wilson, Marvin Harrison Jr., Greg Dortch. So the offense is kind of functioning in a way where the opportunity is there for Wilson. It's just, can he take advantage of it in an intriguing situation? And I feel like week six is a very intriguing situation. My Green Bay Packers, they're the matchup here. And there's probably 1,000 different directions that this matchup can go. But Jordan Love versus Kyler Murray, this is going to be a situation where we're going to see some volume, especially given the defensive struggles of the Cardinals. Green Bay has typically obviously been stronger against the pass than they have against the rush. But when Green Bay's defense tries to potentially lock down a wide receiver one, that ends up opening up opportunities for the wide receiver two. And I can see this as a matchup where we could continue to see more opportunities for Michael Wilson as the wide receiver two in that offense, more volume for him as the Packers potentially try to shut down Marvin Harrison Jr. And just by natural flow, this could be a potential breakout game for him, especially in one where there should be a lot of back and forth here. So it's deeper play here, but I feel like there's potential for us in Michael Williams this week, Wilson this week.
I like this. I like that you're pointing out that the Packers defense is weirdly, like this year, they're 30th in dropback success rate. And a lot of that is because they can't really pressure the quarterback without blitzing. And their blitzes have been very hit or miss this year. So it's a pretty good spot for Kyler Murray to kind of have one of his first big games in a while, like as a passer. Obviously he had that massive rush last week, but and if you look at the opportunity in this offense too, just the last 3 weeks, right? Trey McBride has run the exact same amount of routes as Marvin Harrison Jr., 85. He's been targeted on 26% of his routes. Marvin Harrison's 27%. And he's been the most productive pass catcher, 180 yards leads the team in the last 3 weeks. So he is definitely like a very involved player, somebody that we definitely are seeing, you know, kind of grow in his second season. I thought he was really underrated coming out of his rookie year. So I like this call a lot. I think this could be a high scoring game. They have a top five projected point total on the slate. So if you're in need of a deep sleeper at wide receiver, I like Tara's call to pick up Michael Wilson, because he's still a guy who's actually relatively widely-ish available. I mean, he's only rostered 14% of Yahoo leagues, which is like, I mean, come on now. Let's get Michael Wilson on some more rosters here, especially if this Cardinals offense ever gets going. So those are our make-or-break players for this week. Really wide range of outcomes for a variety of these guys. A lot of volatility, but hey, it's in the bye weeks. We got injuries. You got to consider some of these volatile players. So hopefully we helped you along the way kind of make some decisions there. And with that, let's get into our final segment here on the week 6 preview. Let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week 6, our key to winning is picking the guys that are going to make a difference in your flex spot, because we need you to win this week. You need to win this week. Just mentioned injuries galore, bye weeks now. We're going to talk about a couple of running backs here, Tara, that people might not be starting them every single week, but it's time to start throwing them in lineups, and they're probably guys that could help you this week. Give me your key to winning player here for week 6.
I got to get into the show sheet faster, because you just keep snagging these guys that I absolutely love. So I had to go with my second option here, but he's still fantastic and I still love him to death. It is Chase Brown, who has really been pushing forward in the way that I truly hoped he would, as we were heading in through the preseason, trying to figure out how this Bengals backfield was going to shape out. Now, looking at Chase Brown, a lot of this is very dependent on Zach Moss suffering that ankle injury. We don't know the status of him right now, so touches could dramatically increase depending on the status for him. But regardless, Brown is making his case for pushing this into a committee, and he has been highly effective in this offense. I love the metrics for him. The Bengals rushing attack has been overall solid, both of Moss and Brown ranking as overall top 24 backs in half PPR. But Brown has been creeping up there, stealing touches, and this is the perfect opportunity for him to capitalize here. He's currently averaging 5.6 yards per carry, has 2 touchdowns. He's contributed in the pass game. He's just so well-rounded, so explosive. And while this matchup here against the Giants isn't an absolute layup, the Cincinnati Bengals offense overall is just humming, clicking, providing those goal line opportunities, providing big play opportunities here with Joe Burrow looking fantastic. I expect a fantastic game out of Chase Brown here, regardless of the status for Zach Moss. And if he's out, good Lord, to the moon. Chase Brown is absolutely someone who I want to flex this week.
Yeah, I love this call. I have Chase Brown in a couple spots, and I'm happily starting him this week. Really looking forward to him sort of continuing to grow in that backfield. I'll throw it to a player who I believe, if I haven't discussed him, you have definitely discussed him in this segment before. He's one of our favorites, and he's still a guy that I don't think has started in enough leagues out there, and that's Chuba Hubbard, who leads all running backs with a 67.6% rushing success rate this season. If you're not familiar with rushing success rate, it's basically just an efficiency metric, like how often do you move the ball in context of the down and distance. Like, how are we efficiently moving the ball down the field as a rusher? There's been no more efficient back in the NFL this year than Chuba Hubbard. And if you remember the offseason, Dave Canales during his like intro press conferences and early on in his tenure as the Carolina Panthers head coach, he literally told reporters, "I'm excited to show you how stubborn I can be with the run game." Well, it hasn't been anything about stubbornness so far. Handoffs to Chuba Hubbard are some of the most effective plays that you can call in the NFL right now. Hubbard's given him no reason to turn down those runs. And shoot, like, Chuba Hubbard has given them no reason to rush Jonathan Brooks, the rookie running back, back. He's also probably, I think, completely ended any chance that Brooks is going to be a featured back when he returns. But for this week, most importantly, again, most efficient running back in the NFL. This offense moves better with Andy Dalton. The Falcons are the team they're facing this week, and they are 30th in rushing success rate allowed. And even more consequentially, they're scoring points on their side. This could be a high-scoring game. So Chuba Hubbard can run effectively in this game. He probably has a good shot at a touchdown, and that is why he is my key to winning player here for week 6. All right, Tara, we did it. We appreciate you, as always, jumping in here for the make or break players. Man, again, I'm stunned by the wide range of outcomes we painted for some of these players. But like I said, that we are at that point of the fantasy season already.
It makes it fun. It's fun for us to talk about. And, you know, ultimately, it's going to be fun to try and figure it out and who these guys are that we're starting.
Absolutely. And Tara and I will be with you on Sunday morning for Fantasy Football Live to try to help you with all the chaos along the way. So make sure you're tuned into that. YahooSports.com, YouTube, etc. For now, that's going to do it for today's show. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Next time you hear from us, Week 6, Sunday, it will be in the books, and Andy Behrens and I will be here to break it all down on the weekly recap. Until then, we're out.